Awake by James W. Corcoran. He was scared, and only with the greatest reluctance did he climb beneath the crisp sheets of the cold bed, its cast iron frame tilting inward towards the sagging horsehair mattress hollowed in the middle by passing years. His mother pulled the covers tight, tucked him in, and gently kissed him on the forehead. "Good night, sweetheart," she said, reaching for the switch. "Please, don't. You're nearly 10. Surely you don't still need the light." "Please," he said softly. "Okay, remember we have a busy day tomorrow. You need all the sleep you can get." Despite her fatigued appearance, she still managed to smile. "Night, night," she whispered and gently shut the door. With it, she was closing a chapter in his young life. Though he could hear the muffled sounds of family, friends and neighbours downstairs chatting and laughing, he felt utterly alone in the house, lost in his grandfather's bed. He was gone. The words rolled repetitively around in his head. He was gone, and he wondered where. Only yesterday he had taken Rusty for a walk down by the old mill. The neighbours said he was in great form and full of life. Full of life? What happened? Did he spring a leak? He was gone. The words returned to haunt him. The tick of the alarm clock seemed amplified, resonating on the makeshift soundbox that was his grandfather's bedside locker. It reminded him of the metronome in Miss Hegarty's. He detested piano lessons. He hated the disruption, leaving his friends playing in the park or down by the river and having to scurry up the street to be incarcerated in her dull, smoke-filled drawing room. She, silhouetted by the window, cigarette in hand, gazing through the lace curtains at passers-by, while he sat practicing his scales till his fingers ached. He felt robbed and cheated. His Saturday mornings had been sabotaged and taken from him, despite his fervent protests. Notwithstanding, he liked music, but sadly, not the kind she taught. His grandfather had often asked him to wind the clock. The poor man's arthritic hands had made it impossible for him to turn the key. "Hong Kong," it said on the back, printed in tiny letters. There was even a lever to make the clock go fast or slow. He loved that idea. How wonderful it would be if school could be counted in fast seconds and holidays in slow. Time. What was it, he wondered. He couldn't see it or touch it, so how was he supposed to get his head around it? Had he been able to stop time like his mother had stopped the grandfather clock in the hall, would the old man still be alive? Would he have lived forever? "It's just a mark of respect," she told him, as she stilled the swinging pendulum and closed the cabinet door. He watched, intrigued, as she then proceeded to cover every mirror in the house with a black veil. He wasn't sure why, and didn't even bother to ask. He was gone. Yet he was all around, everywhere he cared to look. The coat behind the door, the old brown hat, the walking stick, even in the smell of the stale tobacco lingering in the room. It wasn't unpleasant. In fact, he almost liked the musty, sweet aroma. He loved watching his grandfather cutting the plug with his small knife, rubbing it between his palms, pulverizing it like grain beneath a millstone, packing it tightly into the bowl of his pipe, and then the glorious scent of sulphur as the blue smoke wafted upwards and the old man pursed his lips and contentedly puffed away. He had often asked if he too could cut some, but the wise old man would smile.
"When you're older," he would say, and pat him on the head. "Besides, knives are much too dangerous for little boys."
The sudden rattle of water pipes in the attic made his blood run cold and he quickly pulled the sheets above his head. Monsters in chains, he thought, lurking in the dark, gargling their throats with the blood of victims. Eventually, the din subsided and was replaced by a hissing sound, not unlike cats, hair standing, backs arched, ready for confrontation. Finally, it too faded, and stillness prevailed. Once again he ventured from beneath the covers. He could hear his heart thump and the clock tick, thump, tick, thump, tick, drifting in and out of sync with each other. Later, outside, beneath the window, he could hear footsteps on the gravel, shuffling to and fro, and muted conversations. Words wafted upwards towards his straining ears. "He'll be sadly missed." Further shuffles. "Ah, God rest his soul." A closing door. "Ah, sure, he's gone now." The sound of a breaking glass. "Didn't he have a lovely death?" He He looked to the ceiling and the timeless worlds hidden in the cracks above his head. He could see a boy sitting in a bath and a sailboat in a bay and creatures, too many creatures, hiding in every nook and cranny. A lovely death. What could they possibly mean? What could be lovely about death? Locked in a casket, no light nor air, buried 6 feet under the ground, with worms your only companions, and they busy feeding on you. Downstairs, he could hear a voice begin to sing, softly at first, then rising as others joined the chorus. "But come you back when summer's in the meadow," they sang. And he knew the old man never would. Nor would he walk the river bank on a warm, still evening, rod in hand, and watch his grandfather cast the lazy river, fly skimming low above the mirrored surface, and brown trout rising, breaking the liquid glaze, furtive glimpses of speckled jade, flapping fins and white underbelly, plopping backwards into the rippling deep. He turned in the womb of the bed and buried his head deep into the feathered pillow, fighting himself, seeking sleep. The pipes rattled once more. Fearful, he opened his eyes. On the locker, he could see his grandfather's glasses taped at the nose with a grubby plaster, and strands of his hair woven into the grease bristle of the brush that lay turtled up beside a bottle of Grecian urn. He once heard that hair still grows, even after you die, that it carries on regardless, just like the fingernails, blissfully unaware. And he recoiled at such a horrid thought. Earlier, the heavy smell of disinfectant and candle wax assaulted his nostrils as he entered the darkened parlour to pay his respects. He was surprised to see the coffin propped in four simple kitchen chairs and his grandfather's hairy ears and nostrils plugged with cotton wool. He sobbed to see him lying in his cramped box, his chin held with a frayed old tie, so tightly it almost touched his nose. When they recited the rosary, he knelt close and stared long at his grandfather's laughter lines, searching for a sign of life, some visible stir, unable to comprehend that never again would they move or break into a warm smile, nor would a hearty chuckle pass through those caved-in purple lips. He wondered if his grandfather was listening now, and if he could hear the revelry below. He hoped he could, and that he had heard him earlier that evening when he bent over and kissed his cold marble forehead and whispered a last goodbye. Footsteps climbed the stairs and he closed his eyes, pretending to be asleep. The door quietly opened and sounds from below gushed in. Through half-closed eyes, he could see his mother stand above him and pull the covers tight. Leaning over, she gently kissed his cheek. He watched as she slowly turned away, stopping by the door to lift the old man's coat from the hook. He could hear her sob as she pressed it close and cradled it like a child. A tear trickled down his cheek, and he could taste its salt upon his lips. Once more, sounds gushed in. He heard the flick of the switch, the rattle of the door handle, and the room went dark.